Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Cindy reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Friday, April 23rd. Constitutional Carry Proponents Ready for Texas Leaders to Lead by Stuart Doreen. Constitutional carry proponents usually start their defense of legislation with the U.S. Constitution. Specifically, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. The debate over constitutional carry inside the state of Texas is no different, said Danny Anderson of SK Arms. The Second Amendment is quite clear, Anderson said. That is the only argument you need. Currently, a constitutional carry bill has cleared the House and remains in political limbo in the Texas Senate. The Texas Tribune reported this week that Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick said he currently lacks the votes to pass permitless carry of handguns. In the same story, it was reported Cal Seliger, Midland's representative in the Texas Senate, suggested he may not be immediately supportive of the proposal. Seliger told the Texas Tribune that his office was still researching the issue, and he tends to support just about all bills related to gun rights, but the system that we have now works. He said it was too early to say whether he would block the bill from coming to the floor or vote against it if it made it to the floor. Anderson expressed his disappointment that Texas leaders, which he said includes Governor Greg Abbott, haven't shown the enthusiasm to get constitutional carry legislation passed, like Anderson said he has seen in Tennessee, where Governor Bill Lee signed a similar bill earlier this month. In fact, Anderson said Texas is not at the forefront on the issue. I understand Texas is a gun-loving state, Anderson said, but when we pass constitutional carry, we would be the 20th state to pass this. Matt Stringer, whose involvement in politics includes the Midland Liberty Leadership Council, complimented Representative Matt Schaefer of Tyler for authoring House Bill 1927, which he said respects the constitutional right of Texans. Schaefer, according to a report from Austin TV station KETK, refers to HB 1927 as common sense carry, and that it provides an opportunity for people to protect themselves if they get into a situation where they feel unsafe. The Texas House approved HB 1927 by a 84-56 vote. The bill has nothing to do with AR-15s, rifles, or guns, Schaefer said in the KETK report. Places like bars, schools, college campuses, the prohibitions they have there will remain in place. Anderson said that the training that some say is lacking with constitutional carry isn't an issue, as the state-required training that currently exists is laughable. He also said the amount of training necessary for those wanting to carry would be blatantly unconstitutional. Anderson also stated he believes stricter measures in other states have not been shown to work. Anderson said SK Arms is planning an initiative that provides a discount for those who come into the store and make a call to Senator Seliger's office in support of constitutional carry. Nacero plans $7 billion gasoline manufacturing facility near Penwell by Mella McEwen. Approximately $7 billion is headed to the Permian Basin thanks to a new manufacturing venture announced by the Odessa Development Corps and Nacero, Inc. Houston-based Nacero has chosen a 2,600-acre site at Penwell, west of Odessa, for the new facility that will manufacture lower-carbon gasoline from natural gas. The plant will be the first in the U.S. to make gasoline from natural gas and the first in the world to do so with carbon capture and sequestration. Sequestered CO2 will be transported via an existing on-site pipeline. Engineering and permitting work is already underway, and Nacero plans to start construction on the first phase of the facility by the end of this year. The first phase will produce 70,000 barrels per day of gasoline component ready for blending and is expected to start operations in 2025. The second phase, which will expand that capacity to 100,000 barrels per day, will come online 2 to 3 years later. The facility will also include a visitor center with interactive educational displays. At the peak of construction, the facility will employ 3,500 skilled workers, and when fully operational, employ 350 full-time operators and maintenance personnel in 3 shifts, with a forecast annual salary of approximately $85,000 per person. The Odessa Development Corps and Economic Development Corps of the Odessa Chamber of Commerce led the negotiations that persuaded Nacero to choose Panwell for the facility. "We are always thrilled to see new development and economic growth in the Permian Basin and offer hearty congratulations to the Odessa Development Corps for their role in bringing Nacero to the region," Sarah Harris, Director of Operations for the Midland Development Corps, told the Reporter-Telegram by email. "The gasoline produced at the facility will contain no sulfur and have half the life cycle carbon footprint of traditional gasoline. The gasoline will be made from a combination of natural gas, captured biomethane, and mitigated flare gas. All of the natural gas used in the process will be sourced from the Permian Basin. The plans to manufacture lower carbon gasoline drew praise from Todd Staples, president of the Texas Oil and Gas Association and member of the Texas Methane and Flaring Coalition. Harnessing the latest industry-led innovations, today's oil and natural gas companies are developing and deploying cleaner, more efficient energy technologies to discover, produce, transport, and refine oil and natural gas," he told the Reporter-Telegram by email. "Beyond utilizing natural gas, captured biomethane, and mitigated flare gas, the plant will shrink its environmental footprint by utilizing electricity from renewable sources. Much of the plant's electricity will be produced on-site from solar panels co-located with the plant. Ector County is the ideal location for us," said Nacero President and Chief Officer Jay McKenna in a press release announcing the facility. "From a geographic and logistics standpoint, you can't beat it. We will be a major new market and beneficial home for the natural gas that is currently flared in the Permian Basin. Our zero-sulfur gasoline will reduce ground-level ozone in cities across Texas and the Southwest, which is causing illness and limiting economic growth." In that same press release, Odessa Chamber of Commerce Economic Development Director Wesley Burnett described Nacero as a perfect fit for Ector County. "The regional economic impact of this single facility will be in the tens of billions of dollars. I thank my staff and all those who worked with them for their hard work in bringing this incredible opportunity here," stated Burnett. Portrait of an Immigrant. Bush's new book includes profile of China AIDS Bob Fu by Stuart Doreen. Midlander Bob Fu is one of 43 men and women profiled in former President George W. Bush's book, Out of Many, One, Portraits of America's Immigrants. The China Aid founder said it was a great honor to be profiled in the book, which also tells the stories of immigrants, including former Secretaries of State Henry Kissinger and Madeleine Albright, former California governor and motion picture star Arnold Schwarzenegger, and baseball superstar Albert Pujols. Fu is not the only Midlander profiled, as the book also features oil man Javed Anwar. Fu this week talked about his family's close relationship with the former president and former First Lady Laura Bush. He said President Bush was the first president to meet with dissident writers and lawyers from China. He called Bush's concerns for religious freedoms genuine, whether he was in office or out of office. Fu has enjoyed multiple visits with the former president, whether it was in the White House or at the launch of George W. Bush Presidential Center's Freedom Collection in 2012. The George W. Bush Institute profiled Fu in 2020, offering in The Catalyst, a journal of ideas from the Bush Institute, a conversation that Fu with Fu that it titled Religious freedom is a very real issue for Bob Fu. China Aid's mission also was front and center when Fu accompanied Chinese freedom advocate Chen Guangcheng to meet with the former president and first lady in April 2013. "He gave me the nickname Bobby the Fighter," said Fu, who also noted that Laura Bush wrote an endorsement of his book, God's Double Agent, the true story of a Chinese Christian's fight for freedom. Fu complimented former President Bush for efforts made to call out China for its suppression of religious freedoms, including noting that the former president has not returned to China since leaving the White House because my brothers and sisters are being persecuted. Not one, but two paintings. Being profiled in out of many, one included the presentation of a painting by the former president of the 43 immigrants. Fu noted that the painting in the book is not the first one President Bush completed. Fu told the reporter Telegram that the first actually hangs in China Aid's office in Midland. It is stated in the book that men and women from 35 countries are featured, and their stories show how hard work, strong values, dreams, and determination know no borders or boundaries, and how immigrants embody values that are viewed as distinctly American. Optimism and gratitude, a willingness to strive and to risk, a deep sense of patriotism, and a spirit of self-reliance that runs deep in our immigrant heritage. Fu talked about becoming a citizen in 2003 and the feeling of voting in his first presidential election in 2004. He voted for Bush for president. "That vote in the presidential election meant so much," Fu said. Fu said that from his point of view, America is a beautiful melting pot where an individual's identity can flourish. "No one tries to force you to become one ethnicity or one culture," Fu said. "You feel acceptance, mutual respect, and love. That is my family's experience." Fu added that racial tensions are not part of the mainstream story about immigration. He knows about coming to America as a refugee. That was the case he recalled when he, his wife Heidi, and their two-month-old child came to the country having escaped China in 1997. "We don't have social elite status," Fu said, "but we are still embraced with love." He said that love exists because of those that have supported his family in China Aid, the people of Midland, those around the country, and even those in his residential and business neighborhoods. "There is that melting pot flavor," Fu said. "That is the story I want to speak of and contribute to further, that this is a great country. We have nothing but gratitude and thankfulness. Even as we travel to countries about the globe, it is different. You don't feel like it is here. America is our home." Editor's note: the reporter Telegram is also attempting to reach Javaid Anwar about being included in former President Bush's Out of Many, One. Labyrinth at Springboard Center. Local artist Cindy Olive has spent the past 3 years working to design and build of a unique labyrinth at the Springboard Center. There are many different kinds of labyrinths, but the one at Springboard Center took 3 months to create and is now a permanent fixture at the Drug and Alcohol Treatment Center. It is made up of brick pavers that have been carefully molded to create a maze with only one entrance and one exit that requires patience and contemplation to navigate. This benefits the treatments provided at Springboard Center by promoting the idea of mindfulness and has proven to be therapeutic by cultures across the world. The center unveiled the labyrinth, the largest of its kind in the area. Labyrinth facts: 1,760 bricks used to create the labyrinth, 52-foot diameter, 11-circuit, Chartres style, 175 hours, total man-hours, began February 1st, completed over 24 days. Idea was initiated 3.5 years ago. Center circle contains an inner circle with a triangle, symbol for AA and Al-Anon. Takes about 10 minutes to walk entire path in and out, which is about half a mile. Unicursal, which means one path, same going in as going out. The three R's for the journey: release, receive, return, or renew, reset, refresh. Local nonprofits give out trees and more to celebrate Earth Day, by Caitlin Randall. Nonprofits in Midland and Odessa celebrated Earth Day by planting trees, gardening, and educating the community about environmental issues and sustainability. Keep Midland Beautiful held its annual Earth Day Festival at the West Texas Food Bank last Saturday. The festival included recycling relays, tomato plant plantings, and seed ball making. On Thursday night, Keep Midland Beautiful partnered with the I-20 Wildlife Preserve and Jana Welch Nature Study Center for a photography seminar at Midland Shared Spaces. Wildlife photographer Matt First gave a presentation on beginning nature photography, the environmental impacts of photography, and microlitter. The I-20 Wildlife Preserve will also hold a free yoga class at 8 a.m. Saturday to celebrate Earth Week and kick off their wellness program. Attendees must reserve a spot on the preserve's website. Keep Odessa Beautiful created reusable tote bags for businesses in Odessa to distribute to customers and planted a tree, vegetable, flower, and herb garden at TL Booth Head Start Center. They also partnered with Atmos Energy to plant 7 oak trees at McKinney Park and handed out trees to those attending the tree planting ceremony. On Friday morning, Keep Odessa Beautiful will hold a drive-through event to give out free trees, including dogwood, elm, and Mexican buckeye, to residents who register for the event. The Midland Humane Coalition, in their April newsletter, encouraged residents to celebrate Earth Day by going green with their pets. According to the coalition, some ways to minimize pets' impact on the environment are to clean up after pets. Dog waste is an environmental pollutant that can carry harmful bacteria and contaminate water sources. Get a digital ID tag or microchip for your pet. Using digital IDs prevents throwing away old pet tags because of a change of address or phone number. Donate old towels, blankets, bedding, bowls, coats, collars, harnesses, leashes, and toys to local shelters and rescue groups. Use biodegradable doggy bags instead of plastic ones, and choose kitty litter made from plant-based material. Adopt a pet from a shelter instead of purchasing from pet stores or breeders. Rope Youth Looking for Volunteers for Summer Feeding Program, by J.C. Lewis. Rope Youth is looking for churches, organizations, groups, and individuals to help feed food-insecure kids this summer in Midland. The nonprofit wants to take food trucks or trailers to apartments to feed children this summer. Rope Youth's mission is to make the community a better place to live, today and in the future, by empowering young men and women to break the cycle and make a change through mentoring and educational programs. The organization will be hosting community meetings for more information, according to a Facebook post. Meeting times are as follows. May 6th at Golf Course Road, Church of Christ, in the Gathering Space, 6 to 7 p.m. May 7th at Higher Grounds Coffee Shop, 6 to 7 p.m. May 8th at Tall City Brewing Company, 8 to 10 a.m. May 10th at Stonegate Church Building F, 6 to 7 p.m. For more information, visit ropeyouth.org. The Village at Manor Park opens FMH Foundation Rehab Park. The Village at Manor Park held the grand opening of the outdoor FMH Foundation Rehab Park this week. The beautiful park was donated by the FMH Foundation and designed by Kelly Cook of KDC Associates and includes wheelchair-accessible gardens, putting green, walking trail, and therapy exercise equipment. Every element of the FMH Foundation Park is directed at therapy and wellness. Planting gardens and seating are at various heights for therapeutic purposes. The FMH Foundation Playground allows Manor Park's grand pals to enjoy watching children play. The purpose of this park is to encourage all Manor Park residents to get outside and enjoy nice weather days with plenty of shaded areas to keep cool during the summer months in Midland. The park also has patio seating alongside outdoor kitchens for residents and their families to enjoy. Obituaries and death notices from the MRT for Friday. Dorothea Bell Carr Barkley of Midland went to be with the Lord April 16th. She was born in Spur, Texas on January 25, 1929, to Adolphus and Eunice Carr, and was the youngest of five children. She is survived by three children, Claudia Barkley Owen and husband Ross of Colleyville, Texas, Catherine Barkley Hamer and husband Mark of Lubbock, and Clay Winston Barkley and wife Sherry of Midland. She is also survived by six grandchildren and six great-grandchildren. Dot was preceded in death by her husband Winston Barkley, her parents, and four siblings. Services were held privately on Thursday, April 22nd. Frieda Sue Kinsey passed away April 16th at Midland Memorial Hospital. She was born November 19, 1944, at the Midland Army Base Bombardier School in Terminal, Texas, to Fred and Betty Sue Caudill. She is survived by her husband Clyde Ray Kinsey of Midland, daughter Holland Pollard, and one grandson. One sister, Lynn Brown, and husband Jerry of Midland, sisters-in-law Glenda Bremer of Flower Mound, Texas, and Gail Caudill, and one brother-in-law, Royce Kinsey of Texarkana, Texas, and many nieces and nephews. She was preceded in death by her parents and three siblings, Phil Caudill, Paul Caudill, and Ray Ann Zant. Celebration of life will be on Saturday, April 24th at 11 a.m. at American Heritage Funeral Home with Minister Paula Brooks officiating. In lieu of flowers, please make donations to the Disciples Food Pantry at First Christian Church in Midland. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory. James Melvin Butler is survived by his daughter, Kristen Dale Butler, and spouse, Jason M. Reimer. Siblings Gail Butler Berger and her husband, Byron, Jane Butler Browley and her husband, Jimbo, a cousin and beloved nieces and nephews. At his final resting place, he joins his parents, Mel, and beloved mother, Ada Marie Butler. Left who cherish his memory, his mother, Julia, brothers Johnny Galindo, Jesse Galindo, Tommy Galindo, and sister-in-law Beatrice Galindo, all of Midland, his daughter Courtney Berenda, two granddaughters, and numerous nieces and nephews. He is preceded in death by his son Zachary, Pete Galindo, and his father. A viewing will be held Saturday, April 24th from 1 to 9 at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin, viewing 1 to 7 Sunday with Rosary at 7 to 9. Funeral services will be Monday, April 26th at Our Lady of Guadalupe Parish and Shrine at 10 a.m., with burial to follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net, or you can visit our website at www.llewellyngarciapipkinfh.com. Memorial service of Robert Payton, longtime Midland resident and owner of Payton's Toys and Bikes, Saturday, May 1st, 10 a.m., St. Luke's United Methodist Church, 3011 West Kansas Avenue, Midland, Texas, graveside following at 11 a.m., Rest Haven Memorial Park.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Friday, April 23rd, 2021. Section A. Murray talks raises for ECISD employees. Pay raises for Ector County ISD employees will be considered when the District Board of Trustees meets in June to approve the budget. The board discussed the increases during the April 20th meeting, and Superintendent Scott Murray expanded on it during his media call Wednesday. He also reminded families that today is vacation day for students and a professional development day for district staff. They, the trustees, are currently considering multiple options, of which they're all excited. We would like to provide a 3% raise to all salaried employees in ECISD. In addition to that, we would like to raise the minimum teacher's salary to $57,000 per year. Currently, our starting teachers get $54,250, Murray said. We'd also like to give a 4% across-the-board raise to hourly employees in ECISD, he added. And finally, we'd like to raise our minimum wage for hourly employees to a minimum of $12 an hour. Currently, it's $11.21. Additionally, Murray said, the district wants to provide a one-time payment of $750 to all employees of ECISD. The pandemic has created really unusual circumstances for every employee in ECISD. Whatever the role may happen to be, whether it's teacher, principal, cafeteria worker, custodian, everyone has taken on additional responsibilities during this pandemic, and we would like to make sure that we retain our very best employees and acknowledge the significant work that they've done. In addition to that, we have opportunities to recruit individuals in ECISD. We're in need of more teachers, custodians, etc., and we want to make sure that we fill vacancies, Murray said. With this one-time bonus and continuing compensation, Murray said the district feels confident that it will put ECISD in a good position within the region and across the state as it recruits, attracts, and retains the highest caliber of employees for the students in ECISD. Murray said the raise will be paid out of the district's general fund, including funding from the voter-approved tax ratification election and House Bill 3. It will not require a tax increase. If approved, Murray said the raise would be seen in the first paycheck of the new school year. He also announced a Permian Basin Education Leadership Summit May 5th at the Bush Convention Center in Midland. The summit is being supported by the Permian Strategic Partnership and the Education Partnership of the Permian Basin. He added that all educational leaders, such as superintendents and their teams from West Texas and New Mexico, are invited. Our purpose is to think about the incredible opportunity we have using the federal stimulus dollars that are being transitioned from the federal government to districts across the Permian Basin, Murray said. We know that this one-time investment is significant. We want to make sure that strategically we are using those dollars to fully benefit the children we serve, our staff members, as well as our community. On summer learning, Murray said opportunities will be available for students from pre-K through 12th grade. This summer, we have a high level of engaging, rigorous, and exciting experiences. We've got a group of teachers and support professionals who have lined up and are excited to bring together some really fascinating exploratory opportunities for those children. In addition, we have opportunities for middle school and high school students. We've invested $250,000 in some robotics opportunities. And whether you are pre-K or a senior in high school, robotics will kind of take over our summer learning experience. Murray said people can visit the ECISD website for more information. HectorCountyISD.org. Council urged to use HOT funds creatively by Federico Martinez. Using hotel occupancy tax, HOT dollars, to promote local sporting events is just one example of how the Odessa City Council can become more creative when using HOT funds to promote tourism, two state tourism experts told council members during a virtual workshop Thursday. Workshop presenter Justin Braggio, general counsel for the Texas Hotel Association, said Odessa is already doing a great job of promoting the arts, but HOT funds can be used for so much more. You can be creative when using hotel occupancy tax dollars, but it must directly promote tourism, conventions, and the hotel industry, Braggio explained. Two ideas he pitched were using hotel tax dollars to promote collegiate or amateur sporting events and provide hotel guests free transportation to the city-owned conference center or various tourist attractions in the city. The key is to make sure the idea, such as promoting athletic events, is able to make an economic impact at least equal to what is being spent, Bragiel said. The workshop on the hotel occupancy tax dollars was held to help familiarize the four new council members elected last year with how the funds can be used, workshop moderator Randy Hamm said. Hamm is executive director of Odessa Arts. Several veteran council members said they found the workshop to be a good refresher course. Councilwoman Detra White was intrigued by the possibility of using HOT funds to promote local sporting events such as soccer or baseball tournaments. The city and the University of Texas Permian Basin are currently trying to negotiate a new 25-year agreement that would allow local sports leagues to continue using athletic facilities currently located on the UTPB campus. Part of the negotiations is trying to find funding to improve and expand current facilities and encourage out-of-town visitors to stay overnight and spend more time and money while in Odessa. The HOT workshop is always beneficial to clarify the appropriate use of these funds, said White, who was elected to council 2 years ago. The promotion of tourism and arts is the standard. But the presentation also mentioned money can be used towards the maintenance and improvement of our new convention center. New information was also provided on the potential use of HOT funds to promote tournament-type sports on UTPB and city facilities. HOT dollars are collected from guests who stay at hotels, Bragiel explained. Tax rates can range from 13 to 17% at Texas hotels. Odessa hotel users pay about a 15% tax rate. Hotel tax revenues are considered restricted funds, which means it can only be spent to promote tourism. The previous city council was harshly criticized by some residents and several city council candidates running for office last year, after it voted to use HOT dollars to purchase two large Christmas trees for a total of $80,000. The trees were erected at the entrance to the Marriott Hotel, which is connected to the city-owned conference center. Workshop presenter Ann Graham, executive director of Texas for the Arts, said most communities, including Odessa, use hotel tax dollars to fund art-related projects because art is instrumental in promoting tourism. Hamm said in some cases HOT funds can be used even if not directly promoting people to stay overnight at a hotel. For example, Odessa Arts uses HOT funds to pay the West Texas Jazz Society to perform every Saturday at the Marriott. The event qualifies for funding because the performances often encourage hotel guests to extend their stay and buy drinks or dinner while watching the jazz performance. The hotel still benefits, even if people don't spend the night, Graham said. There are different ways for the arts to express themselves. Quick hits. Early voting. Early voting will continue through Tuesday for the Ector County Independent School District and the Ector County Hospital District. Voting hours are from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. today and from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday and Tuesday at the Ector County Courthouse Annex, room 104, 1010 East 8th. The following precincts will not be voting in this election due to no opposition in those districts and the current office holders are declared elected. Precincts 102, 107, 108, 109, 110, 201, 207, 304, 305, 307, 309, 312, 401, 402, 403, 404, 405, 406, 407, 408, 409, and 412. Do not vote. For sample ballots or more information, visit www.co.ector.tx.us/page/ector.elections or www.sos.state.tx.us. Contact the elections office if you are unsure of your voting status at the Ector County Election Office, 1010 East 8th, or call 432-498-4030. National Spotlight. A crowd of about 70 gathered Thursday night at Curbside Bistro to cheer on local chef Alejandro Barrientos while watching his pre-recorded appearance on the Food Network's Beat Bobby Flay cooking competition. The Odessa native did not make it to the final competition against Flay, but did showcase his culinary skills and Odessa on the national competition. He created a chile-rubbed pork loin dish and said on the program he knew he made Odessa proud. Curbside Bistro is located on the Andrews Highway and features local favorites, swine fries and sliders, as well as other items. The business started as a food truck and grew into a busy local restaurant. Barrientos has always given back to the community with free Thanksgiving meals and also donating food during the recent snowvid in February. Local news roundup. Car show. The West Texas Street Rod Association and Pilot Club of Odessa have scheduled the second annual car show from 8:30 a.m. to 2 p.m. Saturday at Taco Villa, 1710 East 8th. Registration begins at 8:30 a.m. Entry fee is $30. There will be a raffle for a Traeger grill and three Coach purses and a silent auction. Proceeds provide services to our community through Odessa Pilot Club projects for youth, people with brain disorders, and senior citizens. For more information, call Jimmy Austin at 432-413-0410 or Patty Austin at 432-413-2526. For an entry form, visit tinyurl.com/22S94SN8 and click on Event Image to download entry form. Community Art Day. Ellen Knoll Art Museum, 4909 East University, has scheduled Community Art Day from 1:30 to 3:30 p.m. Saturday. Tour the newest exhibition, Women Artists, Four Centuries of Creativity. Watch demonstrations and enjoy low-touch art activities in the Sensory Garden. The UTPB Music Department will present a performance at 2:45 p.m. The event is free for all ages. Call 432-550-9696 or visit knollartmuseum.org. Outdoor exhibition. Ballroom Marfa, 108 East San Antonio in Marfa, has scheduled Invocation for a Wandering Lake, parts 1 and 2, 12-minute looped outdoor screening through Sunday. The film will be projected onto the exterior at sundown around 8:30 p.m. to 10 p.m. This year's AFI theme is Care, what it means to care for one another, and the many ways this can manifest in our lives and communities. Patty Chang's meditative work calls for contemplation of human and non-human lives, the natural environment, and destructive geopolitical forces as we witness the artist in ritual acts of care and mourning. For more information, call 432-729-3600, email info@ballroommarfa.org, or visit ballroommarfa.org. Free screenings. Free STI, sexually transmitted infections, screenings are available from 10 a.m. to noon Saturdays until May at the Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center Family Medicine Clinic, 701 West 5th. Free pap smears for eligible persons who do not have insurance and live in Texas for ages 21 to 65. and free colon cancer screenings using a stool testing kit for eligible persons who do not have insurance and live in Texas for ages 50 to 75 are also available. Local news roundup. Police searching for man in United Theft. The Odessa Police Department is reportedly looking for a man involved in a theft at a grocery store. The reported theft happened April 5th at the United Supermarket located at 4950 East 42nd, an OPD press release stated. Investigation reportedly showed that a man stole $263 worth of merchandise and left the scene in a white Lincoln MKX SUV. OPD has released a photo of the man that can be seen at tinyurl.com/5YEMRJ35. Anyone with information about the theft is asked to contact Officer D. Morgan or Odessa Crime Stoppers at 432-333-TIPS and reference case number 21-9000160. Man charged with assaulting wife and 15-year-old boy. An OPD probable cause affidavit detailed a 35-year-old man was arrested after he assaulted his wife and a 15-year-old boy. Jose Elias Rojas Betancourt was charged with two counts of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, family violence, a second-degree felony. The reported assaults happened around 10:08 p.m. April 19th in the 1000 block of West 24th, the affidavit stated. Dispatch told officers the complainant, later identified as Yahtzee Rojas, stated her husband, Betancourt, was intoxicated and she was hiding from him. Dispatch also stated a man could be heard yelling in the background. Officers reportedly arrived at the scene and made contact with Rojas and Betancourt inside the residence. Rojas and an unidentified 15-year-old boy both stated they had been assaulted by Betancourt. Rojas stated that Betancourt had come home drunk and started arguing with her about the keys to their car, the affidavit stated. Rojas stated she locked her bedroom door with the 15-year-old boy with her in the room because she was afraid of Betancourt. Rojas reportedly told officers that Betancourt broke the door down and entered the room. She stated that Betancourt had struck her with an open hand on her buttocks, which caused pain and redness. She also stated that Betancourt had held a large kitchen knife up to her face in a threatening manner and stated, "I don't care about you." Rojas stated that while Betancourt was holding the knife, he pushed the 15-year-old boy as he was attempting to prevent Betancourt from striking Rojas, the affidavit detailed. Rojas stated that Betancourt put the knife down, and once he exited the room, she hid the knife under the mattress in her bedroom. The 15-year-old boy reportedly told police he had just got out of the shower when Betancourt came home and was attempting to kick in Rojas' bedroom door. The boy stated that after Betancourt broke the door down, he tried to stab Rojas with a broken piece of the door frame. The 15-year-old stated that he was attempting to calm Betancourt down and Betancourt pushed him while holding a knife, the affidavit stated. The boy stated he saw Betancourt strike Rojas with an open hand on her buttocks. Betancourt reportedly told officers that he, Rojas, and the 15-year-old were arguing, but denied any physical violence. Officers found the knife under the mattress in Rojas' bedroom. Betancourt was arrested, charged, and transported to the Ector County Law Enforcement Center. He had two bonds totaling $80,000, and posted bail Wednesday, jail records show. Police investigating Home Depot theft. The Odessa Police Department is reportedly looking for a man connected to a theft at a home improvement store. The reported theft happened at 10:30 a.m. February 2nd at Home Depot, 5181 East 42nd, an OPD press release stated. Investigation reportedly showed a man stole $558 worth of property. OPD has released a photo of the man that can be seen at tinyurl.com/PSD6NN2A. Anyone who recognizes the suspect shown in the surveillance photo is encouraged to contact Detective Jay Santana at 432-335-4964 or Odessa Crime Stoppers at 432-333-TIPS and reference case number 21-0001815. Provost to Chancellor, Top UTPB Official Leaving for Greener Pastures by Ruth Campbell. After 7 years as Provost and Vice President for Academic Affairs at University of Texas Permian Basin, Daniel Heimerman will be taking the next step in his academic journey as Chancellor of the University of South Carolina, Aiken. Heimerman first came to UTPB in 2014. During his tenure, he has established new colleges, academic and research centers, and institutes in biomedical science, cybersecurity and information, natural resource management, and water and energy. Dan's contributions to UTPB will pay dividends to our university for decades to come. His leadership has been a critical part of our success, and he will be deeply missed by the entire Falcom family. We take great pride in knowing that one of our own has been selected for this important role. We are confident that he will accomplish great things as he leads the University of South Carolina, Aiken, UTPB President Sandra Woodley said in a news release. Former UTPB President David Watts recruited him. Before coming to Odessa, Heimerman was at Mississippi University for Women for 2 years. Before that, he was at UT Brownsville when it existed. He has been in higher education since 1994. Originally from Appleton, Wisconsin, Heimerman earned his undergraduate degrees in history and Spanish from the University of Wisconsin, Oshkosh. He earned a master's in early modern history and a doctorate in French history, both from Marquette University in Milwaukee. I had a love for history, and when I was in graduate school, I had the opportunity to teach as a teaching assistant, and that's really what drew me to continue for 7 more years after undergraduate to pursue the master's and the PhD in French history so I could teach, Heimerman said. He started at the University of North Alabama and was there for 13 years. Heimerman met his wife, Claudia, there. She worked at the university as well. The couple has a 14-year-old daughter, Lucy, and 2 dogs. My first job was in Alabama in 1994, and I taught, in addition to World Civilization, which is a general education course, I would teach upper-level and graduate courses in European history, French history, and the French Revolution, Napoleon and 18th-century Renaissance, Reformation, things like that, Heimerman said. He then moved to Brownsville, Columbus, Mississippi, and to UTPB. The chancellor's job is like that of a university president, and there is a president who presides over the South Carolina system. This will be a tough place to leave for a lot of reasons. One, I really enjoy working with the faculty and staff and Dr. Woodley here. I have a great job here, so that's going to be tough. And it's a job where, honestly, I know I'm appreciated, which is important. The other thing is, personally, we have made some lifelong friends here, Heimerman said. The good thing is that with technology, they can be more in touch with people than ever. The Aiken campus has about 4,000 students, so it's a little smaller than UTPB. But many of the things the university is doing or plans to do are aligned with what UTPB is doing in terms of developing engineering, cybersecurity, a business incubator, and an advanced manufacturing center. A lot of the things that we're working on here, they too are working on in South Carolina. From my point of view, a lot of the stuff that I'm interested in, that we've been interested in here, I'll be able to continue there and hopefully offer some things. Here in the last 7 years, we've considerably expanded our engineering programs and added the three new programs, including master's degrees, Heimerman said. There are a lot of similarities with trajectories that for me was very appealing, and a lot of support from the community, which that's been the great thing here. As I've reflected on my career here, there are a lot of advantages here. Being part of the UT system can't be overstated. There are a few places where we could have accomplished so much. I'm just talking about my little sliver of time here, 7 years, without the support of the UT system. Three engineering programs, $60 million kinesiology building. So the UT system and the support of the people of West Texas, that can't be overstated either, Heimerman said. He added that the football program also started during his tenure. The South Carolina post will be Heimerman's first university presidency. It will be a good new experience, a first, which are exciting, exhilarating, he said. The scenic location was an appeal for him. From a family perspective, it's got a lot of advantages just to be a little more proximate to her family and two sisters and her parents, he said. He added that he likes the fact that it's part of the University of South Carolina system and it's part of the Council of Public Liberal Arts Colleges. It's one of a handful of public schools that are recognized as liberal arts schools. I'm a liberal arts guy. That was really appealing, Heimerman said. He officially starts July 1st, but there are already things planned for before he arrives, such as a retreat at the end of June. Heimerman has previously applied for positions in Florida and Louisiana. There were about 100 applicants for the position he obtained at Aiken. It was very gratifying. Those odds are somewhat daunting, so I feel really fortunate, and frankly, it's been no secret that I've applied, but I've done so really selectively because I'm really happy here, certainly family-wise, and my job, he said. I figured if I was ever going to become a president, I had to shoot somewhat selectively just to see what happens, he added. Death notices for Friday, April 23rd. Karen Marie Choate. Karen Marie Choate, 59, of Odessa, died Monday, April 19th. A memorial service will be held at 11 a.m. April 28th at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Angelita A. Serrano. Angelita A. Serrano, 73, of Odessa, died Monday, April 19th. Mass will be celebrated Friday, April 23rd at St. Elizabeth Ann Seton Catholic Church. Arrangements are by Frank W. Wilson, Funeral Directors of Odessa. Eduardo Aguilera Aguirre. Eduardo Aguilera Aguirre, 55, of Odessa, died Monday, April 19th. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Sandy Dean McLaren. Sandy Dean McLaren, 44, of Odessa, died Saturday, April 17th. A celebration of life will be held at 2 p.m. Monday, April 26th, at Acres West 24-Hour Chapel.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for April 17th, 2021. Letters to the editor. Doreen. We've worked hard from home, and our home is still Midland. Everyone has a happy place. Where's mine? Working at my desk at home with my dog on his bed, snoring away. Baxter is a beautiful black lab Weimaraner. It is a wonderful mix of dog. He is old, about 13 years, with the gray on his face and a slowness in the way he operates. His snoring is a soothing reminder that he is still by my side. Snoring dogs weren't something I enjoyed as much prior to the pandemic, but because of the pandemic, the Reporter Telegram has been closed off to most employees. I'm allowed to go in, but without the rest of the editorial department, what's the point? The days of working at home with Baxter snoring at my side will end at some point. I don't know when that will be, but we will be called in because it will be decided it is safe to be around each other. We will open the doors to customers also. We have missed seeing you, our fellow Midlanders. It's been more than a year, after all. I miss seeing the people of the editorial department immensely, and not because I want to know what they are doing every moment of every day. They have proven they don't need anyone looking over their shoulders. They have worked hard through online schooling, customer limitations for businesses and restaurants, masked debates, negative oil, a sales tax election, historically low rig counts, 10+% unemployment, Chinese protesters, school name changes, a change in the school district's superintendent, the election of a new congressman, the reduction in the number of days we publish, the swearing in of new judges, Capitol rioters, the hiring of a new superintendent, and the opening of a migrant facility inside the county. I estimate that just the four of us in news and oil, Mella, Caitlin, JC, and myself, have combined for 1,500 byline articles during that time. Who says there is nothing local to read in the paper? That doesn't count the hundreds of articles from the two-person sports machine, Oscar and Chris, along with our photographer, Tim, and two paginators, Tori and Evan. We work here and live here. I often hear the question about if we have moved out of the building on East Illinois Avenue. Not yet is typically my answer. We are still working on it. I also have been asked more times than I care to admit if we are still officing in Midland. The answer to that has been and will be yes. I have lived in Midland since 1995. One of four members of the editorial department who has called Midland home for more than 25 years. You don't find that type of institutional knowledge everywhere. We remember when there wasn't much around the Sam's Club at State Highway 191 and Loop 250. We remember when $60 oil was science fiction. We remember when Midland High and Lee played football games in arguably the worst Class 5A football stadium in the state. And we remember when the only splash pad in town was Wadley Avenue after an afternoon thunderstorm. It doesn't matter if we are working from home or in an office downtown. Midland will be our home, and the Reporter Telegram will be the number one source for Midland news. That's how it has been for 92 years. Here's looking ahead to 100. And if a few of those days are with my snoring buddy by my side as I type away at home, even better. Stuart Doreen is the editor of the Reporter Telegram. He and Baxter can be reached at sdoreen@firstnp.com or on Stuart's cell phone at 432-352-0605. Stuart Doreen, MRT.com, Midland Reporter Telegram.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.